Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Shad and I are chatting with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. Now Eric, we were chatting off mic for actually quite a while, just talking about the market and the relatively boring nature and almost depressing nature in a sense of for the gold bulls not seeing gold be able to, I guess, just run higher, right? Gold has rebounded here, but seems to be kind of stuck at this $1,800 level. And on the flip side of that, throughout this week, we've seen gold do decently on some days, and the shares sell off. Today's another day where I guess gold is down, but boy, oh boy, the shares are getting hit quite hard. And I think that is just a carryover from U.S. markets getting hit. But again, that always ties into that conversation of when markets get hit, so do the gold shares. Eric, what are you doing with your portfolio in this environment where, quite frankly, we're not seeing a whole lot of exploration companies run? There are a couple, but overall, good news right now is almost being taken as a sell opportunity.
Yeah, I think I've said it perhaps a few times before, but I mean, I think this is, you know, this latest, let's say, you know, 3-4 months. I mean, I think it's the best investing environment I've seen in the last, I think, 6 years, simply because the price of gold and silver are a lot higher than they were during the 2015-2016 bottom. So even though in absolute terms, units were cheaper back then on average, relative to where gold and silver is trading and what the actual projects are worth today, I think the risk reward is much better today. And I mean, the way I look at it, if I'm making a mistake, that's when I'm overpaying for something. And right now, I don't see it. I'm overpaying for much at all. I see it very hard, actually, to be overpaying for stuff, especially if we're talking about a diversified portfolio, etc. Of course, there's going to be shitty companies run by shitty people, etc., who have no business really going up. But if we're talking about, you know, medium to great quality companies, I mean, I think they're cheap across the board. So I'm like, I have no interest at all in selling right now, because that's like giving away future positive expected return. So if I were to have, you know, sold, let's say, I should have done that at the last peak back in August, let's say, because again, every day we, you know, keep on grinding this out, this downtrend, that's one day closer to the next bottom. And I don't know when the miners are going to go up. I just know that they will go up. There's never been a permanent bear market as far as I know, ever. So I mean, you know, things are going to change. And if you're buying something that's so cheap that it could easily, you should be, let's say, 100% higher right now with even a company doing anything, that's a good deal in my book. And even if it takes 1 to 2 years, and I know people hate hearing that because everybody wants a 10 bagger tomorrow at the latest, but let's face it, I mean, 100% return within, let's say, 2 years, that's stellar returns. If you could do that, you'd become the richest man in the world someday. So I have no intention of selling. I'm buying anything I can. I mean, I don't have any dry powder, really. I'm just fully deployed, and I'm more, let's say, comfortable of being fully deployed right now than I've been in quite some time.
Eric, I think you bring up a good point, and we were talking off mic about the psychology around trading, and that it's just hilarious. Everybody talks about buying low and selling high, but the reverse happens almost every time in any cycle, really in any asset class, but especially in the mining stocks. So if things are going well and everybody's high-fiving each other, that's when people say, I think I'm going to get position. I think I'm going to get in, because it's already run a lot. But when things are like this, where it's a sideways to down market, where we've had a big correction, a little bit of a bounce in April and May, now we had a rough June, and we're kind of trending sideways to down, the sentiment goes in the toilet, and people think, oh, maybe I should go to cash, or maybe I should sell. And they sell at the exact wrong time. And like you're saying, if somebody was going to make 100% return over 2 years, that's fantastic. That's so much more than what they would make in a mutual fund over that same time period, or in a generalist fund. And it's a great return, but people snub their nose at it because they want the immediate turn. Now, so how do you deal with the psychological side of this, where you get swept up in it with everybody else, you feel the sentiment dragging down? How do you keep your head cool during those time periods? And do you look, I mean, you said you're mostly fully deployed now, but if you were somebody on the sidelines right now listening, would you be interested in deploying at these levels, or would you wait for even lower? How would you play it?
I mean, the thing I think is important to have is hope. And I'm not talking about, you know...
Is that an investable strategy?
Yeah, actually, I think it is. Because, I mean, if you understand how markets work, you know that we go from overbought, overvalued, underbought, undervalued. So, I mean, the hope comes into the fact that you know that the sentiment, the pendulum will always swing. So, I mean, you can look at this market right now and like, okay, take the temperature. Is the sentiment good or bad? I would say it's incredibly crappy, and almost no company is able to get any traction, even though if they release positive news. Okay, it tells us the sentiment is crap right now. There have been no buyers almost. There are still, I guess, quite a few sellers. Okay, so you know where we are in terms of the pendulum. It's not that this is the exact bottom or anything like that. It's just that, yes, sentiment is bad. Probably the stores are undervalued. And if you dig into the companies, you'll appreciate the fact that, yes, these juniors are probably undervalued. I mean, they're, let's say, a 10 million market cap company, and they have a relatively early stage project. And if you think about how lucky a company would have to be, how much time and money would have to be spent on even reaching that early stage, and you consider the fact, should that be reflected in, like, say, is that worth 10 million on a risk-adjusted basis when you discount for time? It's no way in hell that that's the case. So you know that, okay, this sector is incredibly undervalued. So if you know it's incredibly undervalued and the sentiment is extremely poor, I just know that it's going to swing someday. I know we'll be sitting here talking someday, and we'll be talking about everything going up 10% each day, like it did in Q1 of 2016. I know that's going to happen, and that's what actually brings hope. You know, the conviction to hold out, basically, because I don't know when. I just know it's going to swing, and if I can buy stuff that's basically trading like gold was at, I don't know, $1,400 or even less, perhaps. I mean, there's no way I'm making a mistake. I'm not saying that gold can't go down to that level and juniors won't follow, but that's not a bet I'm willing to take. I mean, that's a very poor bet, basically, that no, I won't be picking up this, you know, free money on the table here, because there's a chance that what's priced in right now, which is not correlating with reality, the price of gold and silver, will actually happen, and then it's going to look like I made a bad decision. But that's outcome dependence. Then you're looking at the end result, and you're trying to basically, I made a good decision by not buying something cheap because it became cheaper. I mean, that's not how investing works. You can't look in hindsight and say if it was a good or bad bet. All you can do is take a good bet, or a bet that you think is good, and the odds are probably with you that the outcome will be positive, but you don't know when or even if it will actually happen. But that's all you can do, really. I mean, at least in my book, the only thing I can control is how cheap I buy something. Then what happens after that, I have no idea.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. You can only control when you buy something and when you sell something. But Eric, this is all taking into account a bullish outlook, right? This is a long-term bullish outlook for the sector, because you are buying when stuff looks cheap. And there's no saying that stuff can't always get cheaper, especially if you're in a bear market. But do you have a general time frame when you're making some of these investments right now, in terms of when you reanalyze that investment, when you reanalyze the overall sector to make sure that that whole bullish outlook is still intact?
No, not really. I mean, I just simply, you know, believe that, okay, if something is expensive based on the current, everything that's currently known about a company, then it's a sell. If it's cheap based on everything I know and think I know about a company, then it's a buy. And if it goes from, I have no control of how long it takes from it going from cheap to expensive. I mean, sometimes you'll have to wait, I don't know, a year. Sometimes a stock wakes up within a few weeks after you bought it, and it reprices closer to fair value, and the free money on the table is gone. So then you might, rotate out of that story in like a few weeks, and some you might, hold for a year or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's like, people shouldn't really be too greedy when it comes to, returns, because I mean, the broader market on average performs like 8% per year, I think. I mean, that's not a lot, really. But if one just tries to pick companies that are like, well, they don't really need an excuse to go up 50% or whatever, that's a that's a good bet in my book. And again, it's like, yes, this is I have a positive outlook on gold and silver, because I mean, how can't you have it given what everything that's going on? But at the same time, I'm buying stuff that, if we're just looking at the company fundamentals, they should have a bull market even if gold goes sideways. If gold goes down, yes, they might trend down as well. But if you find, you know, let's say some success stories like Labrador Gold or Newfound Gold or any other hot play or whatever, I mean, they can perform extremely well even in bear markets. So, and that's also comes back to the fact that I think that, you know, you really should put 90% of your, no, or let's say 99% of your energy in trying to pick the right companies instead of trying to pick, you know, spend no time doing due diligence and just hope that, hey, I think gold is going up tomorrow or within a month, so I'll just buy this random gold or silver junior and hope that you'll be bailed out because your guess on where gold and silver is going to go. I mean, that's just pure gambling. I mean, there's no alpha in that, and that's not a bet I'm taking.
Well, let me ask you this, Eric. So you're buying and you're mostly fully deployed now, and you're more diversified than you've ever been because you're buying during the weakness, which is a smart way to set things up, especially if you're longer term bullish and you think that things will move in your favor, or if you think you're buying quality. And like you were mentioning, they can still move agnostic of the gold price if they're making real progress, building real value, moving their projects along, hitting with the drill bit. If things work out like you think, and we see an improvement in the gold and silver price, and the miners start moving up, and you get those 100% or 200% gains, would you then get less diversified? How would you restructure your portfolio if things start moving? Let's say by the end of this year or beginning of next year, we get that big uptrend. Would you get a more narrow focus at that point? Would you get out of explorers that have done well and flip into ones that haven't? How would you handle a move to the upside at this point?
That's a good question, and that's not an easy one to answer. I think it will simply depend how it all plays out. I mean, there are some companies where I think, you know, okay, they don't need much success for them to go up, like, let's say 50 to 100%. And unless gold and silver, you know, does extremely well, for example, I would be happy of just, you know, owning something that it's more a matter of when, not if, I will get that 50 to 100% return. And honestly, if it takes a year, I mean, that's still a good bet. But then there will be stories that, you know, become overvalued. And often I have, you know, shed positions, or at least shed some shares of positions that I think have become, you know, overvalued in terms of risk reward, because nobody knows what the future holds. But, you know, the bet is getting increasingly worse, and they just, you know, keep on trucking, basically. I mean, so it's extremely hard. I'm not a perfectionist because it's so hard to pick an exact top or whatever, but I will be nimble, and I will, like I always tend to do, I have, you know, my big watch list of companies. I have my portfolio more diversified than ever. So as long as I have a pretty good grasp of every story in it and can appreciate the risk rewards, and then simply, you know, compare them to each other. Like I like to do an like a thought process, like, okay, I'm, you know, having to choose between two companies. Like, okay, if I could only buy one of them, which one would I buy? Okay, then it basically becomes more clear which case you think is the better if you have to choose. And then you just can keep comparing that to any other company, and then you will flush out basically the best risk rewards in your book, because it's so easy to be confused and, let's say, I can't come up with a word, but I mean, if you follow a lot of stories, it's hard to appreciate all the time what case is actually good or bad. So you have to, I think, sometimes just step back and then start to go over your cases basically. And if some case hasn't done much and it's up 50%, which versus a case that you equally liked but it hasn't gone up 50%, I mean, that's a no-brainer. You should just shed that position that went up 50% and go into the other one. So I mean, again, it's not a simple answer. It's just we don't need perfection. We just try to make no-brainer bets where I have the, you know, odds in my favor, where I think the downside is kind of covered and there's potential, you know, upside potential. But some companies will, when they go up, the upside will diminish and the downside will increase. And in that case, it's simply a matter of, okay, this is not a no-brainer anymore. Slowly shedding my position and try to find the next no-brainer. I'm typically not after 10 baggers. I'm typically after, you know, the probable 50 percenters, which has potential for a multi-bagger.
Well, it sounds like you're seeing a lot of opportunity out there right now, Eric. Probably why your portfolio is so diversified. As you shared with us, I believe it was last week or 2 weeks ago. Look, the fact of the matter is the sector is just kind of boring. Precious metals and the precious metals stocks, there just isn't a whole lot of interest right now, but there is a lot of good work and a lot of money being spent on these projects. So I think there is an opportunity here, but all comes down to what I guess you perceive as value and the catalyst that you want to see. So I hope this interview kind of clarifies some stuff for everybody out there. But look, right now, I think is a good time to be looking at these companies and seeing what works underway, as long as you have that long-term bullish outlook. Eric, thank you, as always, for your time. We'll chat again next week. Have a great rest of your week, buddy.
Thanks, guys.